This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Elizabeth Schneider from Wine for Normal People. How are you, Elizabeth?
I am fantastic and I'm so excited to be here.
Cool. Yes. You're a podcaster as well, just so everybody knows. I'm sure a few people have heard of Wine for Normal People, but where are you based?
I am based in Raleigh, North Carolina, in the middle of nothing that has to do with wine.
Yeah. Where is North Carolina?
North Carolina is about 4 hours south of Washington, D.C. Well, where I am in North Carolina. It's a very beautiful state. It's got some coastline, some mountains, and it's on the East Coast. I'm an East Coaster. I'm from New York originally, so that's how I roll.
What we want to do to talk about today, Elizabeth, is we'll just talk a little bit about Wine for Normal People, a little bit of a background, and maybe some of the things you've been doing and how you've been coping with the old COVID-19 situation.
What's that?
It's this little head cold that some people get from time to time.
Oh, okay.
So let's talk a wee bit about Wine for Normal People, Elizabeth. When did you guys start? It's a podcast. It's quite a popular show.
Hopefully as popular as the UK Wine Show, which, I mean, we are the OG, Chris. We are the old guard. It was crazy. So Chris and I met, for the listeners, we met in Italy for the first time at a conference. And, I mean, we're some of the original podcasters. What year did you start your show, Chris?
I am the world's first wine podcaster. I bet there was great radio, and I bet them to the air by 2 months. So...
So what was it, 2008?
I can't remember.
My gosh, that's awesome. Yeah, I didn't start till 2011, but I still think it's kind of old school. Yeah. So what happened for me is that necessity is the mother of invention. So the reason I'm in North Carolina partially is because I went to business school here. So I got my MBA. And then I was leaving school and I got jobs at I was offered a job at a pill company, a car company, and a wine company. So very... You can tell what kind of person I am.
Yeah.
And the wine company, which I don't like to mention, is a very large wine company. And I had always been passionate about wine. I had done a lot of stuff on my own about wine and learning about wine. And I always found that it was very difficult to break in. It was hard to understand why people in wine shops were not nice to you when they were trying to sell you a product. That was very odd to me. Why there was this incredible barrier to entry. And yet it was like nobody would throw you the lifeline. You know, you walk into the middle of the movie, nobody's telling you what's going on, and they're never going to tell you. So it was very difficult. So I thought, okay, look, I'm going to go to this big winery. They make jug wine. They're going to be cool. I'm going to learn. I'm going to get to do all this stuff. It turned out that they are also quite snotty, but in other ways about wine. And I learned a lot. I learned so much about the inside of the industry, which is really ugly in the US. I'm sure you have heard this. It's just it was set up a long time ago and it's based a lot on like bribes and, you know, supplier power. It's really old school. And after 4 years, almost 4 years, I almost made it 4 years, I just had to leave. So I quit. And at that point, I was working in Atlanta. I was living in Atlanta. I had no job. I went and worked for an entrepreneur for a while, and he was not a very good entrepreneur. It wasn't in wine. And I was like, you know what? I think I could do that. So I started a blog because it was 2009. And then shortly after that, I realized I couldn't set up a wine school in Atlanta because nobody wanted to pay for a wine education. I mean, I'm from New York, you know, North Carolina, where I live is really academic. There's a lot of universities here. So people have a problem with that. You know, I lived in San Francisco or in the Bay Area. I lived in Boston. I never had that experience. So I was like, I don't know what to do. So I started this podcast and with a friend and then he kind of backed out. I started doing it with my husband, just like you do, you know, and then it just turned into a lot of other things that spidered out.
What's your husband's name again?
MC Ice. We don't say his name. He has a whole other career, actually.
Oh, really?
He does not do wine stuff. No. He spends 1 hour a week on wine when he has to, and the rest of the time he just drinks it. Yes, he's in real estate, actually.
Oh, okay. I thought his name was on the show.
No, he's only known as MC Ice, and we decided at the beginning that we weren't going to say his name because, again, we didn't know what was going to happen with the show. We didn't think, I mean, again, it, you know, when you start the stuff, you're like, my mom is listening. That's pretty much it, right? And yeah, then all of a sudden there's a lot of people listening. We thought, just in case, we'll just give him his college nickname, which is based off of his name. So that's what he, that's what we use.
I thought I knew his name. I just hadn't remembered it. I was saying earlier, I'm terrible at remembering people's names. So
it's not you.
Not me. Cool.
This is me.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, well, we let Jane on the show, and she gets an introduction as Jane. So my wife gets a chance to do it.
She does. And she, and I have emailed with her. She's lovely.
Hmm. Yes. Yeah, she's got a nice English accent. So at least it might be the UK Wine Show. At least one person sounds English on the show, which is quite nice.
I feel like you're, don't you feel like you're honorary English? I mean, first of all, you got the Commonwealth thing, so you that. And second of all, you've lived there longer than you did in New Zealand, right?
No.
Or equal?
Getting close to equal, yeah. I've been 20 years and 22, 23 in New Zealand, so. Or no.
You're almost there.
I don't know. You have to work it out. It'd be hard.
You're almost there.
Almost there.
You're almost full on English. You're going to have to give up your New Zealand status.
No, no. And I haven't even got a British passport, so it's unlikely to happen.
Oh, really?
So it's not interviewing about myself. You know, that's the thing about podcasts. You're just so used to interviewing people. I'm interviewing you. So you started up in, when did you say, 2000 and...
The first attempt was, you know, 2009 was when I really started the business part of it. And then podcasting started in 2011.
Mm.
Yeah. By the end of that year, we won iTunes Best New Arts Podcast, which is a hilarious thing because I had no idea. And all of a sudden I started getting all these emails like from people. They don't tell you, you know, all of a sudden you win this award and you had no idea that you got it. And I got these things from people, my business school friends who were listening to it, like being like, oh my God, this is so awesome. And I'm like, what are you talking about?
I must admit, in the early days, we used to get all our numbers off iTunes because they were the sort of market leader. But I mean, everybody's on, a lot of people are on Android now and all sorts of things. So
it has multiplied so much. And I actually, a few years ago, got into a debate with a very prominent person who claimed that they had access to all of our download numbers. And I was like, we're writing a podcast, an article in a publication. And they were like, well, we have access to your download numbers. I was like, no, podcasting doesn't work that way. But anyway, I did not win that. And they still published it. And I was like, that's not, I even got it. Yeah. Do you host on Libsyn or?
No.
I got something from the head of Libsyn. You know, I got a quote from him and he was like, no, nobody has access to that. But yeah. Yeah. It's really cool. Technology's changed so much, hasn't it?
Don't even go there. I mean, I showed you my box that I record on. It cost £1,000.
Oh my gosh.
When I bought it, because podcasting didn't really exist. There was no equipment for it or anything like that. And so the stuff I use is the same stuff the BBC uses or used to use.
Oh my gosh.
20 years ago.
You know, that's funny. I just had a conversation with somebody else who does a podcast about how microphone costs have come down so much. And when I was first starting in 2011, I was like, I cannot afford, I had this Blue Yeti. It was a condenser mic, which really just pulls in all the sound. Mm. So in the early podcast, you can actually hear frogs outside my window. Because it picks up everything. And then I changed the mics over and it got better. But it's really funny.
What sort of wine qualifications? Because you used to say in your podcast that you're a sommelier or trained sommelier or something. But you've removed that and you just sort of say, talk about qualifications now. So what's going on there?
Well, yes. So I am a certified specialist of wine and certified sommelier through the Court of Master Sommeliers. But you might have read that in the US, the Court of Master Sommeliers had some issues.
So yes, inappropriate sexual misconduct.
And it's an incredibly misogynistic organization. I never liked it anyway. I mean, I decided not to pursue anything further with them because I felt like that was the case when I started. And I'm also not a big fan of blind tasting. I know a lot of people like it. I just don't like that. So once it got past theory, where, you know, I feel like I could take a really hard theory exam and that would be, you know, easy and interesting for me. That kind of gamesmanship, the blind tasting, it just, my brain turns off when I do that. So I didn't go any further than that. I took it out because I really didn't want the affiliation, honestly. It was just, it feels dirty.
How's it going over there with the Court of Master Sommeliers? Is it still Because it all blew up, about 6 months, a year ago.
Yeah.
And, we covered it on the podcast, but then it sort of settled down a little bit. I haven't heard much about it.
It's like everything, unfortunately, and again, I don't know how it is over there, but it's one of these very sad truths, especially about wine. In other industries, things do change. In wine, they make a big, big deal about it. Diversity initiatives, sexism in the wine industry, and then it goes away. And then all this stuff is going to happen again, sadly, just because, you can throw money at people and give them scholarships and that doesn't solve anything. That's what people do. They give money. Mm. They say they're going to solve the problem and they really haven't removed some people from the Court of Master Sommeliers, but I think a lot of women, obviously being a woman, a prominent woman in wine in the U.S., I get a lot of people, other women in wine, who ask me questions, and I just tell them, look, go for WSET, go for the WSET. It's at least, if you're going to go for a program, it's more structured, it's more academic, and honestly, it doesn't have those connotations. And again, if you don't work in a floor of a restaurant, what's the point of having a sommelier, a certified sommelier? I just made that because I think that at the time there was nothing available in my city. The WSET has blown up in the last 10 years, but it really wasn't that prominent in the U.S. back then. So I didn't do it. And now I sort of feel like I don't know that I need to do it now.
You get to a point where you sort of know stuff anyway. And that's cool. Tell us about what's happening in Wine to Normal People, Wine for Normal, because it's not just the podcast. You've got the book, you've got your courses, you've got all sorts of stuff. Tell us about what Wine for Normal People is all about.
Yeah. I mean, so the podcast is obviously like kind of the center of things, but I do have the main part of my livelihood is teaching online classes to people actually all over the world. I now offer classes for the UK and EU friendly time zones. And that was mostly demand driven. I didn't know that people actually even wanted that, but it's very cool. And they're very topical. There are things like Wines of Portugal, or I'll do deep dives. I just did, wines of Tuscany or Piedmont, things like that. They come with very detailed notes. One of the things I started the online wine school really for the purpose of correcting what I found were the big problems in wine when I was getting started, which is there wasn't anything that you could do where somebody would explain things to you in a really careful way, academic way, and then also let you walk away with notes. So I do really extensive notes that I give to people, like these huge booklets of like 10 or 12 pages. It's basically like a book every time because I want people to pay attention during the class and not be writing the whole time. So I do that and they're really popular. I limit them is the only sort of problem because I find that after I teach them live, they're not pre-recorded. So after around like 40 people, I do sell individual seats. They're like $25 US. It's not very expensive. But so I find that after like, 40 people, if you do individual seats, a lot of couples take them, blah, blah, blah. So you wind up with about 40 people. After that, woo, it can get messy. I'm sure that you've been on Zoom calls like that where it just gets to be a little chaotic and people they're not listening or they're asking crazy questions. So I have to limit it, but it's super fun. I love that. I have a Patreon, which is, that is hugely important because I'm an independent podcaster like you. Yep. I'm not part of a podcast network. Contrary to what a lot of people believe, you do not make a lot of money off of advertising. I have one sponsor and you don't make a lot of money off of that. So that's not the golden ticket, but Patreon helps. And in return for that, it's become this awesome community where I actually barely post on social media anymore. I mostly only post on Patreon because those are the people who really care. Like they're the ones who really, in it. And it's like $20 a year to join. So it's not, for the bottom. And as you get, you can join for a higher level and get other goodies. But yeah, there's that. And then I do public speaking, or I guess I used to do public speaking, but now I do online corporate events. Yeah. So yeah. And that is really fun. I love live speaking. And I wrote a book. I happened to write a book called Wine for Normal People, which is essentially the podcast written down. So it's a primer. I say wine is vocabulary and geography. And that's basically what the book is about, with some etiquette, food pairing, stuff like that. And that's been awesome. Like everything I've done, I'm not a great self-promoter. I'm not like always on social media. So I feel like the book is sort of just this slow seeping climb, just like the podcast. All of a sudden it just became a big thing. You know, I mean, you just sort of do stuff and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, people know about this. The book is sort of the same way. So it's exciting.
And how long's the book been out for?
A little bit over a year. Or no, wait. Yeah, a little bit over a year. November 2019 is when it launched. So it's pretty new.
Yeah, okay. Most people talk about books as being less of a cash cow for them and more of a door opener.
Yeah, it was actually, for this, it was a little bit of a door opener. It was a good way to get more people to know about Wine for Normal People. There's some people who just read the book and don't know about the show. And I think the other thing for me is that it was, the audience really wanted it. And I, for me, the audience is everything. I don't do anything for the industry. I'm not, I really dislike the wine industry in many ways. I think it's made up of some really not great things. I love the producer side, but not the other stuff. So don't participate in a lot of industry stuff. I mean, people are always like, what? I can't believe you buy your own wine. I'm like, yes, I buy my own wine. You know, I don't, I'm not going to get wine sent to me by people and review it for, I mean, it's like pay for play. I'm not going to do that. I'd rather drink what I want to drink and I'd rather pay for it. Mm. So yeah, in that way, it's the audience just drives everything that I do. I mean, obviously I lead with the topics that we do on the show and it opens people's eyes. That's all I want to do. I mean, I think you're the same way. You know, you're an educator. I'm an educator. We just want to help people like wine more, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Although I, to be fair, I do like to drink wine as well. I'm quite a fan of the product.
Okay. Yes. We're not talking about that either. Yes. Of course. Yes. Yeah. Of course. I love wine.
Did you come up with the same conclusion as me? There's nothing more boring than listening to someone drink wine on a podcast or on the radio.
I would never do that. In fact, I don't even, if I make a, I don't like doing video a lot and I hate wine videos. I've never come up with a good way to do video because it's like, who wants to watch someone else drink a glass of wine that they're not drinking? Yeah. And it's the dumbest thing ever, isn't it?
Well, that is one of the problems with your format is that you don't supply the wine. They have to get similar styles of wine, which is how you can sort of reach the European market with your courses, because you just say you need a Cabernet Sauvignon, a Chardonnay or something like that.
Yes. And it is a problem, but it's also an opportunity because one of the really cool things, the side benefits of that is that, you know, you can get whatever wines you want. I recommend that you buy 5 bottles and for, you know, because they're what I think of them as is like benchmark tastings, right? Like, so you're going to go buy those bottles. You will have them for the week. One of the problems I also found when I was learning about wine was that you taste it and then you just forget it, right? Like you go to this tasting class, you taste it and then you're like, what was that? So the good thing about it is that people get to buy the bottles and yeah, it's, you know, it's $100 or, you know, £80. And then you wind up going through and having these wines for the week. If you have a Coravin, it definitely helps, right? Or if you have a partner that likes to drink like we do, that also helps.
Yeah.
But you can see how the wines change and really get to know them over the course of the week. The other thing, the huge benefit is that when we're in the class, everybody, we're talking the whole time. You know, I'm talking to them and they're talking to each other and they're all describing these wines. So we get to see what the range is.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of consistency, but there's also range. So it's like mine's sort of like honey, but it's more on that, you know, green side that you were talking about. So we get to see, okay, well, all of these things are possible within wine. And then people say, what was that producer you had? And they'll write it down and they'll get to know other producers. So there's a benefit to it too.
What happened to you guys when COVID-19 hit? Because you were already set up for Zoom, weren't you?
I absolutely was. Yeah. I mean, things just sort of took off because whereas I had been on the podcast promoting these classes forever, like, I mean, I can, you know, I'd be probably for the last 6-7 years, go to wineformnormalpeople.com/classes, go, blah, 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 blah. And people, you know, I would never, I just started filling them. I mean, I almost quit in 2018 because I would get, there's some classes I had like 5 people sign up and I was like, this is not good. So in 2019, there was a shift. Things started to change even before the book. More people were listening to podcasts, so that there was that. And then I guess, you know, Zoom was around. I had been doing them on Google Hangout because that was what the technology was. And then there was a slight shift and people started signing up for the classes and most of them would come close to filling. So when the pandemic hit, people were like, oh, I remember winefornormalpeople.com/classes. And then it just went crazy. And now, you know, the classes are mainly sold out. So I mean, you know, I've got classes for May, except in Europe. They're not actually in Europe. They're not sold out yet. And it's interesting. It's following the same model that it started in the US. I now have US people signing up for UK classes because they can't get into the US classes. But you know, it starts out slow with a really good core of people, and then it grows. You know, people tell each other about it, and the fans. The people in the UK and Europe who listen to the show are so awesome. They're just so intellectually curious. They're so awesome. I'm not saying that the US aren't like that, by the way. I'm just, you know, this is just it's a newer audience for me. And now we're starting to get some people from Australia. I had my first New Zealand listener identify herself. I was very excited about that. But Australia seems to be, I don't know if you found this, Australia seems to be a little bit behind on the podcasting, like getting into podcasting. Have you found that?
Not really, but I don't worry about numbers too much. I mean,
I'm not talking about numbers. I'm talking about people identifying themselves. You know what I mean? Like, that's how I don't know. I have no idea where the numbers are, but it's more just like, I hear from people. I get emails all the time, And so all of a sudden now, so many people are from Australia who are contacting me being like, I found you. And I was like, wow, I used to have one Australian listener.
Yeah. I get a lot of Kiwis, but that's because I am a Kiwi and they sort of go, oh, hi, mate, Kiwi. And all that sort of thing. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
The book's for sale. You've got your classes online, which support it. And that does... I'm just trying to work out where your revenue streams come from more than anything.
Yeah. Well, Patreon, right? So I said Patreon is super helpful. That helps us a lot. The classes, and then corporate tastings also. Yep. And then, you know, there's a little trickle of ad revenue also that helps. I do sometimes do a little bit of consulting for... strange things. It's usually people who listen to the show who are in the industry, not wineries.
Yeah.
So I'll do some things like, you know, I have done wine lists and things like that before, but mostly it's, you know, I have a couple of random clients that are affiliated with the wine industry and they'll ask me for market information, mostly because they know I'll tell them the truth. Because again, I have the freedom of being not beholden to the industry. I think that really helps. I don't get money from anyone in the industry. If tomorrow, you know, the industry called me a pariah, I feel like more people would like me even more. Because I have no problem telling the truth. You know, like there's a lot of truths that need to be said.
I think we'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having me on, Chris.
Not a problem. Cheers very much.